Thanks for being here, y'all. My name is Will Hegard. I work as the operations director for Footprint Project. We're a small nonprofit based out of New Orleans. Our mission is to help build back greener by providing cleaner energy infrastructure to communities in crisis. So I might be a different type of event person, but I do like to think about how gatherings of whether they're fun or not fun, how they can learn from each other, and how we can use the fun ones to help the not fun ones, and how we can help use the what we learn in the not fun events to inform how to make fun events better as well. So I'm just gonna leave one interesting little. I find this interesting. Hopefully you do too. The mobile medical unit. CrowdRx is a big mobile, the people that send paramedics and EMTs to take care of folks that are probably just on acid or trip at festivals. Their mobile medical unit is contracted by both Burning Man in Nevada and the New York Emergency Management Agency. And that big, three-bed shipping container mobile field hospital is on contract for FEMA under the New York state. The money flows from FEMA down to the state. Then during a disaster, they activate it and get paid for that. And then they also move it every year out to, 100 miles north of Reno. And so it serves as the one of the most busy ERs in the country outside of Burning Man, which is a festival of 70-ish thousand people, and it takes care of just as many critical, ill, injured folks. And I just find that reflection of what live events are can mean many things. And either way, I think I'm really excited to talk about how sustainability in both lanes is in many ways the same thing. And we can take a lot of those lessons and cross-pollinate them to both make live events more meaningful, more enjoyable, safer, cleaner, all the good things that we want to experience during a festival. All those things can be applied to help communities respond, recover, rebuild, and really make themselves more resilient ahead of the increasing extreme weather events that I think we are all facing. And so, just one more thing before I wrap up. How many of y'all have been to a mass gathering that's fun? Okay.
You're present at one. We're
Yes.
glad you're
Yeah, this
here.
is the best one, right? Great. That's an easy question. How many of y'all have been affected by a disaster? Okay. Yeah. I'm glad that the last number is smaller than the first number. So yeah, thanks for having me.
So this image here.
Oh yeah, I'll just talk briefly to wrap up my thing. Does anyone know the image on the right? Is that one? That's Burning Man, right? Anyone know the image on the left? Yeah? Zaatari refugee camp in Jordan.
One of them is a disaster.
One of them is less fun. So yeah, I hope we can kind of explore both of these theme the same theme in two different contexts, and hopefully we can gain something from both.
Hello, everybody. I'm Neil Vasavada, co-founder of Overdrive Energy Solutions. We are committed to getting rid of fossil fuels at live events. We have been around, we're getting into our second season now, and we've already powered the largest renewably powered stage in US history with Willie Nelson at Luck Reunion last year. And then we did the largest solar activation ever at a American festival with powering Billie Eilish's headliner set at Lollapalooza last year. Clients of ours also include Google I/O, Coachella, Warner Music Group. Actually, no, it was Universal Music Group, I think. We've worked with music festivals and other events, relatively well-known names. This year, yesterday, we finished our second Luck Reunion with Willie Nelson. our initial estimates are we saved over 750 gallons of diesel yesterday. There was no generators at all, except for the ones that were in the tour buses, and we're coming after them too. If any of you all around this afternoon, anyone here like funk? Y'all funky?
Yeah.
All right, Bootsy is playing on our stage, powered by renewable energy, at Auditorium Shores at 4 o'clock. It's free, so come on out. And we've been powering the community concerts at Auditorium Shores yesterday and today. Over there, we have a main stage, we have food trucks, we have sponsor booths, and they have grid power, because renewable energy isn't just about solar energy. Right now, today, we have the technology. We have the resources to make live events significantly greener, more resilient, safer, a better fan experience, and we can do it at a competitive cost to fossil fuels. How did this all come about, and why did this all come about from a bunch of dudes in California? It's his fault. During the pandemic, I had these ideas, and I was
this
actually...
This whole panel is your fault.
Yeah, right? It really is.
Oh, God.
During the pandemic, I was introduced to this guy when I was poking around some live event stuff, and Will's work in disaster relief really set the groundwork for what's possible. And we took a lot of their, you know, they actually helped us with some equipment early on. We took a lot of the lessons they've done, you know, they taught us. Will and I, we hung out at Burning Man in 2022. And we've been in conversation this whole time, because the things that he's been saying, the things that the Bonnaroo Foundation have been doing, they're all intertwined. The simple fact is that sustainability in all its respects can help not just make our world more sustainable, but it can make it more resilient. It can make it safer. There's intersections with health, wellness, diversity, inclusion. There's all of these things that touch sustainability. And that's why it's important for us in the live events world to work on sustainability. Because number one, it makes the world a better place. And number two, it's the visibility of our industry, right? Growing up, our industry led the charge for apartheid, you know, anti-apartheid stuff, for the famine stuff and the USA for Africa and all that stuff now. And now we have the opportunity to show waste management practices, to show energy, to show travel, show the world how we can do it better. And then we can feed that stuff back to people like Will, you know, people living in off-grid communities, our kids going to school in cleaner, safer, electric school buses. All of this stuff touches our industry. So thank you all for coming.
Hello, hello. That was well done, Neil. Have you done that
before? I've had a little bit of practice.
Wow. Are you running for president?
You got my vote.
Yeah, man. I do want to just touch really quickly on, or at least continue with what Neil was saying about, you know, sustainability outs is... especially to Bonnaroo, sustainability as a definition doesn't just mean environmentally climate change related or green specific things. Sustainability is about living a healthier, sustainable life. So that touches into not just doing better things for the planet, but providing civil, you know, better civil liberties or gaining access to healthy water or healthy water and goodness gracious, clean water, healthy food, and basic freedoms. So, you know, again, tying into it's more of just using the music industry and festivals as a trial area so that Will can do his job better when disaster does strike. But then again, truly providing these little case studies for broader deployment in a bigger context of life.
Fabulous. Thank you, Kelsey. So my name is Stephen McCord, and I also work in this space. I produce live events, sustainable live events, and I co-produce the Get Off the Grid Fest, which happens every other year. We're going to be in Huntsville in 2025, and really proud of the work we're doing there, and I'm just excited about where this technology is going and the people that are involved now that are driving this change. So let's get into some questions, guys, if it's okay with you. Kelsey, let's start with you. We know there's progress to be made across all large events, right? And we also know that it's not happening overnight, unfortunately. It's been a one step at a time. And but anything that we can do now is better than not doing anything, right? So can you highlight what the work that you're doing at Bonnaroo Works Fund in terms of what's going on to help green your event?
Yeah. So again, you know, we do obviously look at sustainability as a broader context, but there are specific things that, and I think to me that I would hope is what you guys are hoping to take away from this. And again, I'm so grateful that you guys are here. I wish this room was three times the size and full of people that were able to do what you guys are trying to do with your events and trying to continue this in all of the activities and productions that are happening. But from a Bonnaroo perspective, obviously we have plenty of work to do in a variety of areas. And these are the guys that we try and work with on the energy side. But a lot of it does focus on waste diversion. We really focus on the variety of streams that we look at with, you know, obviously there's a significant amount of waste with 70 to 80,000 people gathering on a farm for over almost a week. So we really focus on what we're actually able to divert from a landfill. So, you know, we have done a variety of things over time to just continue to increase the amount that's not going to a landfill, which includes obviously strong relationships and recycling. We have the ability to have a permanent compost pad on site, which is obviously a blessing. We know not everybody can do when you don't own the own the area that you're executing your event. But if you have partnership available on the composting side, that's obviously a huge step. And then also having a certain amount of restrictions, but also the choices being made from what are your main trash contributors? And a lot of that at festivals is beverages. So, you know, it starts with eliminating single-use plastic. We now use aluminum cans for our water. We have a partnership with Turn Cups, which basically means anything within our main festival grounds is either poured into a Turn Cup, which is a reusable, it has to be turned in, and you know, can't be any kind of single use plastic, but your cocktail, your wine is poured into a cup that gets turned into a bin, and then outside of that, it's either cans or boxed situations. And then, you know, we do as much as we can from a waste diversion education on the front end of, we have people placed throughout the site that are guiding people on where to actually put in the different streams that we have, where to put their products. And it's an educational piece because most of our attendees wouldn't necessarily know that literally everything they're buying from our food vendors are compostable products. So we require our food vendors from the start. You have to purchase from our Eco Products partner. So everything from the plate, the fork, the napkin, everything has to be from that portal so that we know what's being brought to site is truly compostable, and we're closing the loop on that. I know that that's not always an opportunity for smaller events, but it is something that we've worked really hard to build over time. I'm a little neurospicy, so forgive my notes. I tend to lose train of thought and just want to make sure I don't forget anything important. Obviously, the energy side of things is a reason that, you know, these guys are here. We are, again, blessed, similar to the compost pad. We have the opportunity to have a permanent solar array on site, and then we'll continue to supplement through individual solar partnerships or solar projects. With Will here, we've done a solar-powered stage, a solar-powered kitchen, solar-powered charging stations. Hopefully through different conversations with Neil, we continue to grow that. We know that we have work to do in that area, but any new structure that is going in on the Bonnaroo farm is going to have solar moving forward. And then we're still continuing to figure out, even this year, more ways to utilize the permanent structures that we have on site. So it's not just wasted space and not just feeding into the grid and feeding into the fuel consumption. For those situations where we do run into issues where we can't just flip the switch and be immediately fully solar and do all the things that I know Neil's doing an awesome job at, we have a very significant carbon offsetting program. So we have this amazing partnership with We Are Neutral, a nonprofit based out of Florida, that they've done a combination of audits over time where they look at what are all of the things that Bonnaroo are outputting that is contributing to our massive carbon footprint? And that's not just me being hyperbolic. That's every major festival in the state has a massive carbon footprint. We know that. We want to do better about it. So what are those alternative things that we can be doing in the meantime? And that's where We Are Neutral comes into play. And it comes from everything from just being able to fund, you know, just be more proactive than just throwing money at the problem and calling it a day. We do, and that's a big part of why the 501c3, the Bonnaroo Works Fund, is involved, is we want to make a community investment in a lot of these things that we're doing. So with We Are Neutral, it's, again, getting the number, doing an audit. We're doing an updated audit this year to, again, make sure that we're moving in the right direction as we grow. But it's also looking at the creative community-based things that we can do, like over the last 14 years, I believe it is, we've done, you know, upwards of 2,000 low-income housing retrofits and weatherizations, where we'll go into low-income housing each year leading up to the festival with a series of volunteers, replace all the light bulbs with LED lights, replace pipe fittings, and then give an education walkthrough to the inhabitant and say, hey, if you keep your thermostat between these ranges, you'll save this much. And then these physical replacements that we're making are reducing your bill by this much. So not only is it the education component, but it's also the functional replacement of some of these things. And, you know, it's a good problem to have, but we've essentially run out of low-income housing units to continue to do this because of HUD, and they're doing similar things. But now we're going back to Manchester, which is the local community, and looking at major businesses or major community centers, things that we can do from a school perspective and do the same kind of thing. So it's not just a drop money at the problem and run. We really are invested in the community and trying to impact them, not only from a cost savings perspective, but educating them on why it's more valuable for the long term. We did a solar install for the Manchester Coffee County Conference Center, put solar panels on their roof. Initially, it kind of received with pushback because the people that saw that investment were like, why didn't that money go to education, or why didn't it go to civic things, which we do also fund through our grant making in other areas. But from a perspective of that money could have gone to something else until they saw the energy bills. And that's when we really turned them into believers of, oh, wow, okay, you did make that investment. It is saving the city money, and this is a major staple of the area. And that's really important that, you know, it's kind of an example of what we'll get to in the festival side. But when you show them the bills, or when you show them that this money will save you money in the long run, it's not just about you're doing good, but you're also saving yourself a lot of opportunity or money and opportunity to maintain that for a long time to come. So the carbon offsets, again, a big thing in investing in local, but you know, I'll get into a lot more, but we also see a lot of the education pieces that we do as a big part of what is what's going to help the next generation continue to be green. And I kind of consider the education component to be functional, the FEST functional education, which I'll get in a lot more of that a little later, and then life functional, where it's educating people on what they're coming to site is the FEST functional stuff, making sure that they're not bringing stuff they shouldn't, and then life functional, meaning when they go home, they're inspired to do this in their communities and do more things. But again, we'll get into that a little later. But and then the other side, just being our grant making. So we'll invest in environmental organizations. People can apply for grants between $1,000 and $10,000 each year. And it's everything from conservancy to, you know, Duck River is a local river near Manchester where we funded cleanups or education programs. You know, another example from last year was a uniform recycling program for low-income education systems, where they can turn in their uniforms, reuse them for the next year. It's not just keeping things out of landfills, but it's also educating them on why that's valuable. So it's everything from the things that we do on site from a functional operational standpoint to the education to ensure that it's a fully well-rounded festival, targeting patrons and giving them more than just the you didn't use a plastic water bottle, good for you, but it's like, what can you take home and do in your community from a bigger standpoint?
Wow, that's a lot, Kelsey. You're busy.
I'm not bored.
That's fantastic. Wow, that's some serious community service there. Okay, Will, over to you now. Disaster recovery, entertainment, concerts. What's the connection there? So tell us, tell us about your work in disaster response and how that's led you here on this stage right now to the live entertainment event space.
Sure. Yeah. It's an easy one. Softball, Steven. It's just throwing softballs. It's actually the reverse. I had been working in the disaster space for a while, was a paramedic and then did the Ebola response in Guinea, West Africa. And we had heard about solar refrigeration and we were like, let's try it over there because fossil fuel supply chains in one of the most poorest countries in the world, most remote areas, it's just really hard. There's a lot of, paying cash transfer reimbursement programs for fuel in a disaster. It's just brutally challenging. And I'd come back from that response as a program manager, and I had,
where was that again?
That was in Guinea, West Africa, during the 2016 Ebola outbreak.
The Ebola outbreak, yeah.
Well, it was 2015 and then 2016. And I had heard about solar things. We piloted some solar fridges over there, and then came back to the U.S. and was like, why the heck isn't these things should be everywhere? This is they're doing it over there. Why can't we do it back here? And I had been working as an EMT at Burning Man, at the Rampart Medical Clinic, the CrowdRx thing that gets moved around. And we asked them, hey, can we try to power a part of that clinic with a solar thing? And that first pilot, and it was 2017 when I had no clue what I was doing with batteries or solar panels, just had no idea what I was doing. And we set up some of these panels on the shipping containers outside of the clinic, plugged them into a battery, run that battery. The electricians came over and like ran it in to power some of the breakers on the clinic infrastructure. And it like worked. And I was like, and what I can't believe, there's a little bit of me that's like, I don't know how they let me do that. Cause it was just, yeah, I mean, gotta love it. But that for me was a moment of like, all right, these live fun events, particularly in a clinic setting, that they're taking care of people. If those lights go down, that, they're trying to intubate someone, or they have serious, just because it's a fun event doesn't mean the back, backstage can get a little dicey there too. So for me, it was like, this is an opportunity to use these gatherings as mass casualty simulations. And that's in my mind kind of where I see the live event space really offering a tool to the disaster response community and saying, hey, we know Bonner is going to be there every year. We don't know when the hurricane is going to hit, but we know that Bonner's.
Yeah, but he gave me a different one. Well, sometimes it's both, because in 2021, he was at Bonnaroo. He was at Bonnaroo, and Hurricane Ida hit, which canceled Bonnaroo. But he was able to take the solar rigs we had at Bonnaroo down to Hurricane Ida relief. So sometimes it is both.
Yeah, and they flip off of each other. I think they dovetail, and they bounce off of each other in a really positive way. And that's like, we love celebrating resilience. Like, you can't. Particularly in the work, I think you can only go to so many disasters without wanting to party a little bit, right? And so there's a good, to be able to do both is really, I think, the sweet spot in a lot of, there's a lot of learning that can be transferred across these industries if we can avoid siloing ourselves.
Which this Ida here?
Yeah, that's a picture of hurricane, of a house after Hurricane Ida. So that is Grand Isle. We sent the trailer that was powering the Bonnaroo house stage to serve as a base camp power for that the volunteer camp that was rebuilding Grand Isle. It was served for about 4 months at no cost to that volunteer group. And then if you just...
In the fridge.
And so...
Which
great little
state. Now it resides in Louisiana.
yeah. Great story. So Kelsey funded a commercial cooler, fridge that we powered off of a solar grid. And then the Hurricane Ida hit and we just took it out of Bonnaroo, drove it down to southern Louisiana. And now it's at a fire station. It was powered off of a microgrid for a while. And then the fire station got power back. And now they just have a fridge. So it's this like getting infrastructure tools, ideally sustainable infrastructure tools, into the hands of the people that can use them. And it's just not, I don't think there's a lot more to it than that. I will just mention quickly, this is also a post-Ida, Hurricane Ida activation. This is Louis Michaud, a Grammy Award-winning Cajun musician that was very active in the Hurricane Ida recovery, and we actually helped him mount those solar panels on this stage. They call it the Soleil Rodé, solar roller. It's Cajun French. Those guys are crazy.
Is Louis here?
Yeah, he's going to be playing, I think, on Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah, just we're talking about maybe Grammy. Doing something at Bonnaroo, so maybe I'll go.
Yeah,
see
hopefully. That's the Soleil Rodé.
He just won another Grammy.
Yeah, yeah. And he's very, you know, it's this way that I think also for disaster affected communities, their plan, so they're up in Lafayette, and they were like, you know what the community needs? They have plenty of bottled water at this point. They have plenty of, you know, pallets of MREs and stuff. They need a party. They need a chance to gather and sing and, you know, just it's been 2 weeks or 3 weeks after the storm. They've been living without, you know, air conditioning, rebuilding their homes, and they brought this solar-powered stage down, rolled it through these tiny little Cajun towns, and they had a pickup truck full of ice with just beer in it. And people would just walk up, grab a beer, there's a lot of, you know, American Red Cross, Salvation Army, there's a lot of trucks going around, but man, that one drew a crowd really fast. And the number of people that were like, I haven't smiled in 2 weeks, you know, I've been working my ass off trying to get my tarp on my roof or trying to, you know, just like get some semblance of normalcy back. Like, it's these little activations that can be so powerful for these communities, and it requires live event people. Like, you know what I mean? That's a musician. You know, this is exactly the link that I find so fascinating.
So for you artists out there who want to do a little solar-powered event somewhere in a parking lot, talk to Will. He's got and probably Neil, too, can advise you on it's probably not too expensive, right?
It's cheaper than diesel.
So at whatever level you are, you know, you don't have to be a Grammy Award winning artist to make that work. A little quick sidebar, how I met Will. We were talking about, we had met through some mutual friends, and I was in the music business. I'm in Nashville. And we started talking. He was like, hey, can you think you can help us get into Bonnaroo? And I was like, when? You mean, this is like March. Bonnaroo's June. And he's like, yeah, this year. And I was like, oh, I don't know, man. I don't know, maybe next year. But long story short, we were able to get in and just kind of see the place and scope it out. And when they're not on the front lines of a disaster, they have this equipment, you know, and they're not always at a disaster. And so we were thinking of ways to maybe integrate some of this equipment and help kind of replace some of the fossil fuel generators. And anyway, we were talking and we just started talking on the phone. And 3 months later, a category 4 tornado came through our backyard. And within 48 hours, Will was at my house. The power was out for 9 days. I'd never met him before. And he came to my house, and within hours, he had coordinated 3 different microgrid stations, portable microgrid stations, to help power the most affected areas in Nashville, those communities that were most in crisis from the tornado. And so I was watching this on the front row, and I was just like, I could not believe what I was seeing. And he was bringing power to devastated areas, and it was clean power, and people were wheeling up in their wheelchairs. And it was just amazing to witness that firsthand. So it was at that moment, everything crystallized for me. And I said, you know, I want to be a part of this. And so it's just been a wonderful journey, Will, since then. And I appreciate all the work that you're doing.
Thanks for letting me sleep in the dark in your twin bed.
And he stayed, man, through to the bitter end. Okay, great. So over to you, Neil. Your festival client base is impressive, man. And it's just going straight up, right? What are some sustainable energy solutions that you deploy for powering your live events, just for the novice fan out there that.
So first I want to point out that, you know, we talk about solar energy a lot, but solar is just a power source. And the simple fact is, we have a lot of ways to generate electricity. We have a lot of ways to store it. And we have ways to deploy it intelligently. And that is what Overdrive is all about. And I think that's a big part of our success. And that's also a big part of why this technology can help in a lot more different ways. So let me give you a couple real-world examples of how we use sustainable energy and how sustainable energy is actually more resilient. It's obviously more sustainable. And it's cost competitive with other energy sources. So first of all, let's be clear here, guys. Let's not mince words. This industry is powered by diesel. You go to Bonner, you go to Coachella, you go to, you know, urban festivals in the middle of cities, and it's all diesel. ACL, all diesel. We bring generators to buildings. We did Dead & Company tour last year, and we had 2 500-kilowatt generators outside of Wrigley Field because there's not enough power in the city of Chicago to run a concert, especially at a baseball stadium. Fenway, the same thing. The LA Forum, the same thing, you know? And diesel is turning a fossil fuel very inefficiently into electricity and a lot of waste products that are bad for us. So what can we do? Well, what we're doing here at Auditorium Shores is a great example. We can store energy and use it for later use. Actually, we did that at Billie Eilish. So for Billie Eilish, you know, what are two things that we have at a lot of festivals? Not every festival, but use case is important. We got space and we got time. Maybe not while the festival's going, but during the build, you know, a steel build at a festival takes 5 to 10 days at least. That's building the stages and everything like that. And there's usually no one standing where the audience is going to be. So for Billie Eilish in Chicago, we set up a 10,000 square foot, 60 kilowatt solar field. We used it to power, to charge battery banks, totaling, I think we were around 1.2 megawatt hours. To give you an idea, that's about what a big stadium show uses. We used that for the show. Well, the solar panels were in the middle of the field where the the audience stands. One of the things that we pioneered is quick deploying solar. In just a quarter truck with 4 people in 4 hours, we were able to get the entire solar field down, charge up the batteries, pull it back. So right there was really no additional cost or inconvenience or anything. We were using the space that we had and the time that we had. So it could be cloudy, it could be night. And the concert was at night. We had solar energy. What we're doing here at Auditorium Shores, and I got things out of order there, is they have power there. Well, what are we doing there if they got power? Well, that's that whole supplemental energy power thing I was talking about. Why, again, did Dennett Company have these generators? It's because there's a perception that there isn't enough power or it's not reliable enough. Well, so what we're doing at Auditorium Shores is we have, in one place, we have a 30-amp electrical service. And we have 3 food trucks that each pull up to 50 amps apiece. You guys ever been in that situation? You got power somewhere at one of your events? And who over here has had to bring in a supplemental generator unit at an event? Okay, bunch of you, right? Well, how do we do this? We had the run of the show there is, I think we're doors are at 2, we're done at 7. So that's 19 hours. All right. A lot of that's nighttime, but, from, you know, what we have is, we have battery banks there and we have generator units. And the way our units work is they can take in solar energy and they can take in grid energy. So we're charging these batteries with the solar and we're connected to the grid. And these units can add energy on top of existing energy. So you take 30 amps in the grid, and you take that solar energy that we are storing in these batteries, and we boost it up to 50 amps. This works at any scale. You could be at a we can be at a major sports stadium with a big stadium show. Again, those builds, that's my background, by the way. I did a lot of stadium touring, did a lot of festivals. And you know, again, that build takes 5 or 6 days. So we can have a battery bank that's charging for that time. We can use the power coming into the stadium, and we can supplement it. And one neat thing about these technologies is they also can act as UPSs, backup power supplies. You know what would happen? Like I said, we're taking 30 amps from the grid right now. And by the way, if anyone comes out to Auditorium Shores, I'll be happy to give you a tour. So we're taking 30 amps from the grid. Like I said, we're powering these food trucks. What happens when the grid goes down? We need a generator, right? No, the power systems are sized to provide all that power even if the grid goes down. So what is the situation there? We have as much time as we have batteries to fix the problem, which is hours. So right there is another example of where we can eliminate fossil fuels in an application where people think that that's the only solution we have. So between solar, between grid power, and generators. That's right. We can use generators to make our events more sustainable. Now, the first time I say that, in fact, one of the biggest production managers in the world, I'm not going to call him out by name because I still want a job in this industry, but stood on a stage and said, they were charging batteries with a diesel generator. It's effing stupid. And I mean, this is the biggest guy in the business saying that. Any of you have a hybrid? Anyone drive a hybrid car? You get better fuel economy in your hybrid car than a gasoline engine.
I'll go buy a hybrid car.
Well,
are we pitching hybrid cars?
How does that work? I was trying to pump you up a little bit. Here's another thing we can do. The fact is that diesel generators are actually more efficient when they're run hard. But in our events, because we're always sizing them for the peak load, they run really, really inefficiently. And then what do? The rest of the time, they idle. So we can use a diesel generator and a battery pack, just like a hybrid car, and run that diesel generator at its most efficient point, charge the batteries, and then shut it off. Doing that, Burning Man last year saved over 68% diesel.
Yeah, they reduced their runtime from generators at those sites by 90%. So they, by having the generator charge the battery, it allows the generator to cut off, and then the battery decreases like your phone, and then it trips on to charge the battery back up. And that reduced their diesel runtime for those generators by 90% from 1 hour. They were running 24 hours a day for 2 weeks to 1 hour a day every day for 2 weeks, which is just staggering.
And then we've seen 70% in the stuff that we've done. Coldplay had a 49% reduction. But the thing is, you got to bring all this extra equipment, right? Now, I don't mean to get too technical. How many of you know what a twin pack is? So did you guys know that when you rent a generator for a big event, you don't rent a generator? You get two. It's just the way this business works. They always give you two because they say that you need a backup. So we can eliminate one of those right now, replace it with a battery system, which gives you more resilience, which gives you more efficiency. We're also replacing a component so we don't have to pay for that diesel, so there's a cost offset there. Well, what about cost? When you can run your power system anywhere, you can put it right next to the stage, you could put it under the stage. Right now, we have to run generators typically several hundred feet from the power source. For a number of reasons, right? So did you guys know Beyonce carries an entire semi-truck dedicated to electrical cable to remote position their generators? So now we've eliminated a secondary generator. We've eliminated hundreds and hundreds of feet of very heavy cabling. We've eliminated the labor. By the way, I think the labor bill for the electrical installation at Billie Eilish was in the $30,000 to $50,000 range. Wow. So we eliminate all of these costs. And guess what, guys? Renewable energy is better, it's safer, it's more sustainable, and it doesn't even have to cost more. And the proof of the pudding is this. Luck Reunion, last year, Pileo Group out of Oxford University partnered with Sound Future to do an independent analysis of our activation there. We gave them all our data, and they came back and validated that we were $1,000 more than the diesel activation. So this year, they wanted a bunch more, and we kept the cost the same. So right now, 40 miles from here in Spicewood, Texas, a little artist known as Willie Nelson has played in two festivals now with no additional cost to their previous diesel bill.
Fabulous. Congratulations, man. Yeah. That's where we need to be going. That's pretty cool, huh? Pretty amazing. Kelsey, let's keep it rolling. You were talking earlier, you mentioned education and demonstrations on site. Yeah. Tell me how that kind of engagement supports your initiatives there at Bonnaroo.
I mean, obviously, I could talk for hours about this when we're down to the last 10, 13 minutes. So as I mentioned, you know, I kind of considered it Fest Functional or Life Functional in terms of the education that we focus on. Fest Functional would be an example of, you know, not only the information that you're preparing campers for, but we also try and make a splash with it. So like last year, the last 2 years, we've partnered with NRDC on a variety of sustainability education platforms to basically provide patrons with the best information that they're coming to site with the least amount of stuff or the right kind of stuff, whether it's a sustainable packing list or road trip tips of carpooling and coming with your friends. We'll partner with artists to do PSAs that are not only providing education on the NRDC platforms that they're bills that they're fighting on behalf of, but again, also provide the bigger splash of the NRDC world, as well as the Bonnaroo patrons learning something about, you know, they're not bringing the wrong things that are just going to end up in the landfill, but they're starting from a better place in terms of what they're bringing to site. And then also just festival education from what we're putting on the big screens of what goes where. You know, it's one thing to just say the stock, reduce, reuse, recycle. But again, for the streams that we have between compost, landfill, recycling and turn cups, making sure people know where those are guiding and putting bodies on those trash stations so that they are putting things in the right place. And then also that circles back to, it's a stream that is diverted, but I didn't mention before, we do a substantial food and recovery program, food and material recovery program, where everything from catering to we have these amazing farm-to-table community dinners with Oxfam, who's in the house, and Eat for Equity, where it's, you know, it's sourcing local, it's sourcing from regional areas, it's providing this amazing community dinner, it's a fundraiser, and again, it's educating people on you know, how to make more organic and sustainable choices in their community, making sure that any waste that we have from that is going to the Grundy County Food Bank or the Nashville Food Project. And again, that's just more stuff that's being diverted from the landfill. Similar with material recovery, whether it's construction materials or we partner with a nonprofit out of Chattanooga that literally comes to site Monday morning after the festival, pillages through the landmines that are the Bonnaroo camping grounds and pulls usable camping goods, takes them back to Chattanooga and uses that as a substantial fundraiser for them. We also do a major metal recovery program. Again, all of this stuff just being diverted from the landfill. Getting back to the education site, though, it's also utilizing the screens that are on site. You know, again, it's one thing to just say, hey, while you're here, do the right thing. It's another thing to say from a sense of scale perspective, we'll either do big screen things or we have, we'll get to Plinter in a second, but giving people context of just the small decisions that they're making, how it adds up. And then kind of the mecca of our education is where the life functional education happens. And that's our area called Planet Roo, which is essentially the epicenter of the impact programming for the festival. So we've got the how stage. All of the Bonnaroo stages are confusingly titled, but the main stage is the what stage. The second main is the which stage. We have this tent, that tent, the other. Our tent is called the how stage because it's how to make an impact, how to live a healthier, more sustainable life. And that features panels, programming, yoga, meditation, dance classes. It's our nonprofit village. We have an academy with a living learning garden where the garden is maintained year-round. The academy has workshops that are hands-on, everything from carbon footprint 101 to upcycling and turning Trash into Treasures. We have, again, nonprofits from environmental causes as well as arts and education. On our house stage, we'll have panels and conversations like this, or fun creative things like Sense of Scale Trivia with We Are Neutral. Well, they'll give groups of teams that will have to kind of answer questions about environmental things. But for example, like, do you know how much one incandescent light bulb, how many LEDs would be the equivalent in terms of power output? And it's actually 22, but the that kind of answer in Sense of Scale thing is like, it's our way of making the boring education seem fun and be as vibrant and Bonnaroo-like as we can. And again, these kinds of things can go on indefinitely in terms of the types of specific panels and stuff that we do. But the education piece really does come down to those two main things of, you know, it's not only educating the patrons before they come to site so that we're dealing with less waste to start, it's also informing departments and sponsors. You know, our sponsors have to adhere to our composting policies as well. So if Sonic's there and they're serving smoothies or slushies, the drinks have to be in turn cups and they have to use compostable straws or no straws. We don't allow any kind of straw that's not compostable and approved by our team. So again, it's a lot of just that upstream education and building those sustainability policies that you have to kind of be a dick sometimes, but if you don't require it, they won't do it. And it's kind of the need to say, this is what we expect out of the people that we partner with and the partnerships that we have. And you know, it goes for the people that we work with. It goes for the vendors, the sponsors. And you know, the patrons are the least controllable thing that we have, but we can still be proactive and doing what we can. And I think that that is a big deal of, you know, from you guys as either being artists or organizers, you know, the if they don't know what your level of what your values are, what you think is important, then they will continue to be, you know, the lowest hanging fruit of, or what the least barrier of entry is just showing up. But if you give them a little more education and they know it's just small tweaks that they can make, they will make those tweaks and it does build over time.
Great. Thank you. We got rapid fire here now, folks. We're out of time almost. I didn't get
through. I'm so sorry.
How do you guys feel about just opening up questions?
I will do that, but I have one question for Will first. Will, looking out 5-10 years, what do you see as the biggest greenification opportunity for live event planners from both sides of the fun and non-fun event coin?
Ooh, that's a really hard question. I'm not sure I'm going to get it right, but it doesn't matter because I get to just spout futurism. I think it's one, the infrastructure is the easiest thing. I think the tech is there. It's the financing is, I think, a challenge, but there's a lot of people that are working on this to make it better. I think the challenge is the planning pieces, like for folks that are out there trying to do event planning and try to do a solar thing or a sustainable concert or whatever, the farther ahead you can get in the planning stage, the better. And that piece of the opportunity is so huge. Like if everybody wants, you know, the trick is awareness, education, and then getting access to the money to pay the people to do the things, right? And so I think this is, the technology is moving so fast that 5 years out, we'll have sustainable, you know, microgrids at every, you know, I think we're going to see a massive shift in the electrification of stuff, that of all the infrastructure, and then real like water, power, shelter solutions that are practically more effective, safer, sustainable, more accessible, which we didn't talk about much, but these things all go hand in hand. And I think there, it's more of like how they work together that we haven't started to see. Like we're testing atmospheric water generators powered by solar microgrids to reduce plastic water bottle use in disaster affected communities. Like that, those, how these things play together, I think is really going to make a massive change, you know, where all the containers that show up in Bonnaroo are already covered in solar, you know, paint on solar, and they already have a battery in the floor, you know what I mean? And they're already using a water, like the integration of the infrastructure, I think is really exciting. And then we can get the data to justify these slightly increased investments that are required
to make the shift. And that for me is like the, that's when the switch is going to go off and everyone will drive a Rivian and then just plug their stages into the Rivians. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to happen so fast. And I think the more y'all, as we're all planning these things, can like look out and be like, that we're going there. We just need to get on the train because the train's leaving the station, you know, like, and the folks that don't get on the train, they're not the people want to go to the cool, more fun, meaningful event. Like, people want to go to Bonnaroo because it's cooler and they see cool stuff there. And they, you know, so I think that's really exciting that the Gen Z millennials, they don't want to go huff diesel for a week while on acid. We want to go take acid and do it without diesel. It's not that hard.
Last question, really quick, 1 minute. For all of you, what would you most like the audience to take away from this conversation? Neil, we'll start with you.
The
1 minute.
The opportunity to do this is now. You don't have to wait. That's it.
Wow. Succinct and
yeah,
on
I'll
point,
keep mine
yeah.
under 1 minute because I just talked for like a whole bunch. I think meaning. I think. The more we can tie events to the problems that we're all facing right now in the world, whether it's mental health, whether it's climate change, whether it's, you know, you pick your issue. But I think the more you can make your event meaningful and radiate meaning outside of that event, the more successful it's going to be. And it's just good business if you're an event planner to find ways to connect your event to the bigger problems that are that we're all facing. So I think it's just a no-brainer for folks to think a little bit outside of their event and connect it to the shit that's hard, because that's what draws people in. People want meaning.
Yes. That's well said, man. Kelsey, what about you?
I've talked plenty as well, but I would just say, you know, you guys are already doing more than most. You showed up here and want to obviously be here to learn more about how to do better. So I'm grateful for y'all for wanting to go back and do this in your communities. But I would say you're doing more than others, but continue to, again, try and radiate that out more. And just progress is better than nothing. Progress is better than perfection. Don't wait. Just do it now. Do what you can now. And there are a variety of ways you can continue to build and grow. I think energy is obviously a huge one. And again, there's a million things that we can, million more hours that we can spend talking about it. But again, whatever lane you choose, don't just choose one and focus on then. Just do continue to make progress where you can. And again, just be proud of yourselves for being here and trying to do the right thing. And hopefully we can give you some ideas to continue doing it.
Yeah, we ran out of time for questions, but we'll be here. So if you guys will just stick around. I don't know if there's a panel coming right up, or do we have a couple of minutes? 1 minute.
Otherwise, we'll just be outside in the hall.
Or yeah.
But do it. Let's go for it. Let's knock this thing out.
Wasn't mentioned is refrigerants. And so this is true in disasters, through in air conditioners and generators and all that kind of stuff. Are y'all working to eliminate HFCs, and is that something that's on your radar?
Yeah, I can try to take that. Yeah, it's hard. And we still buy air conditioners and fridges at Lowe's, you know, for disaster-affected communities, or the fridges, you know, we're using off-the-shelf tech. I'm really excited about a company called Gradient. They're doing some heat pump systems, and there's some really exciting ways of reducing the energy load that's required to cool things. But HCFs or HFCs, I think, are more regulated than ever, but the drawdown, you know, climate, whatever, project drawdown, still identifies them as the number one climate thing. So it's a huge
one. Yeah, in disasters, being able to recover that stuff would be super helpful as part of a disaster, you know.
Yeah, if anyone has money to set up the first disaster rapid recycling team, I've been trying to do it for years, and I've yet to find any money for it. Cool. No one cares.
I love what
really
y'all are doing. Thank you so much. And I want to hear what batteries you're liking these days for your systems.
Thank you. Anyone else? Thank you all very much.